Cause this is Tools Day. Tools Day, that's right. We're here to talk about the tech tools in your life. You know it's Tools Day. About to start. We're enlightening your life with this podcast. Tools Day, we might.
Wow, applause. Yeah. That was actually really good. Okay.
Okay, awesome. Nice. I think I messed up a little bit, but it's
as
fine.
As a whole, A plus.
There's no perfectionism happening in our intros.
That's true.
Ever.
I take it down. Welcome. 8 out of 10.
Welcome to Tools Day, a podcast about tech tools, tips, and tricks on Tuesdays at 2. I'm your co-host, Yuna.
And I'm Chris.
And today we're talking about ES6. Wait, what was the name of the show going to be again?
Solved by ES6.
Okay, Solved by ES6. We're going back and forth. These are 5 things that you can do to improve your code, actually make it a lot easier to code by using ES6. So maybe before we get into those, we should talk about setting up ES6.
Sure. Okay, so right now, as it is, you do need to use a transpiler of some sort to get your ES6 code into an ES5 compatible format.
And transpiler means you transform and recompile your code into ES5 so the browser can understand it.
Wow. I actually did not know what the word actually meant. I've been using the word
That's
over and over again.
That sounded like an infomercial. I don't know why. I just said it so smoothly.
But fun fact, Chrome now has, I think, 85% coverage of ES6.
Wow. That's great.
Which is amazing. And I think the other browsers are catching up too. By other browsers, I mean Firefox and Microsoft Edge.
Safari
is working at it.
All right, well.
But Safari's kind of the stepchild now.
You're probably going to have to keep transpiling for a while.
Yep.
And you can do this throughout just by using Webpack. You can do it through Gulp. You can do it in your terminal.
Yeah, there's a few options. Ton of different ways. The most common transpiler is called Babel. Written by this guy whose name I can't remember right now.
Sebastian McKenzie.
Nice, okay. And he is a genius. So props to him for this amazing piece of tech he's made. I think he works at Facebook now, right?
Yep.
So Babel, Webpack, Browserify, whatever you want. One hiccup is that the modules, which we'll talk about later today in this podcast.
It's one of the 5.
One of the 5 do require a module loader. Like Webpack or Browserify. So even though it's an ES6 thing, you do have to use a module loader like Webpack or Browserify, not just Gulp to transpile it down.
Yeah. All right, so let's get started.
Yeah.
The first thing that we have are the new variable types that ES6 provides us with. And these are let and const. So basically, let and const allow you to use block scoped variables. And the problem that we were running into before is when you used JavaScript, you had to understand this concept of variable hoisting, which is weird to the language. It's basically when you create a variable, it hoists that variable to the top of the function. It becomes out of the scope of what you think it might be inside of the visual code that you have. It's like hard to explain.
So JS has this cool thing where it is actually a compiled language, even though people don't think of it as one. So when the browser sees JavaScript, it compiles it first and then runs it. And in that compile phase, it brings any variable declarations to the very top of the file. So it hoists them to the top,
right.
One could say. One does say. That's the definition.
That is, yes.
That is the word. And so,
That you kind of have to understand
right.
as you are coding why you might face some issues with variable changes, et cetera.
Yep.
And what let and const do is allow you to instantiate the variable where you write that variable.
Yep.
So this is really awesome. For instance, a great example is just if you're doing a for loop where you have like var I is equal to 0 and then like I is less than 10, say I plus plus, you know, like those loops that we do. Using variable doesn't instantiate that variable inside the loop. It brings it to the top of the function, or the top of the file. Whereas if you say let I equals 0, it's starting it there. It allows for better memory savings. Even more on the memory savings front is const, which allows you to say this variable will never change. It's a constant entity.
Yep.
It doesn't ever alter. If it does, it's going to give you errors. Which is great. And another problem that this is solving is that there was no way to declare that with variables.
Right.
There were people like would start doing capitals and stuff, and there were conventions here and there.
Yeah, so there were a bunch of conventions we took from other languages, but it was just kind of like, hey, everyone please respect these but not everyone always did. And then,
right, and you'd have to know that ahead of time.
Right.
Whereas const is pretty obvious.
Yep.
This is a constant variable. It's great to use.
Plus, if you have a linter in place, it will yell at you if you do it any other way. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Which linter do you use?
ESLint. It's fantastic.
In one of your text editors that you change on the weekly?
I don't change weekly. It's like every 2 weeks. ESLint plus Airbnb's preset. Amazing. Check it out.
I use ESLint and Sublime.
Yeah.
What's the new one that you started using?
I've been using VS Code recently. It's Microsoft's latest attempt at making an editor.
It seems nice.
And it's wonderful. It's got so many cool things. It's not the point of the show, but it's a tool.
It's a tool.
It's wonderful. Check it out. It's super fast. It's not fully featured yet. It hasn't actually received the GA. What's GA stand for?
General
availability.
Yes,
yeah, that's the word. It's GA is in March, so check back in with it in 2 months.
Yeah,
and I think it has the signs of a great editor.
So back to variable types. Don't use var. Use letter const. Moral of the story.
Yep.
All right, number two.
It's arrow functions, also known as fat arrows, because that's what they look like. That's what they're called in other languages as well.
It's an equal sign and a greater than sign.
Yes.
It makes up a fat arrow.
And so this is the new, or a new, way of declaring functions. It basically has two main things over functions. One, you don't use the word function, so the syntax is shorter, which is great. And the big one is that it does not bind the keyword this when you declare the function. And this is kind of a big thing, and it trips up a lot of people when it's what's happening here.
I think that was the biggest hurdle I had to jump over when I was first learning how to code, and
right.
Especially with, like, DOM manipulation and
fence. So people, you know, when they first learn to learn the code, they'll see, like, the method dot bind being used sometimes. They'll say, like, this dot something dot bind this.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what's happening there, it gets pretty, you have to know what bind does, you have to know how this is instantiated and created, and there's a whole lot of, like, sub-steps you need to know to figure out that syntax. Dot bind, all right, so the fat arrow instead says, hey, just use the this context of whatever I'm being called within. So it gets rid of having to use that dot bind. You'll see this fat arrow syntax a lot in, like, React apps because you have to refer to its own component all the time. It's kind of a weird...
Functions solved by...
It's a kind of a complicated subject. It's hard to dive into without a code
snippet.
Explaining
snippets. This honestly takes an entire lesson.
Right.
It's its own entity. Like, just understanding what you're actually calling the function on.
Right.
And then if you write in ES6, you don't have to deal with that whole lesson.
You don't deal with
different.
Some of the lessons.
It's,
yeah.
It's a this that you probably mean.
Yes. basically. So fat arrows, generally, when you use them, if you use them correctly, I guess it's a hard topic. If you want to learn more about this, there's a great book called You Don't Know JavaScript by Kyle Simpsons at Getify. And he goes into... You Don't Know JavaScript?
Yeah, but which book in that series? Because there's six.
I think it's the second one. I think it's actually called this and something else.
Okay.
I'll look it up. After
we'll
this.
Share the link in the show notes.
And he goes into great detail on how to declare this and what this means and what contexts. And the fat arrow can kind of simplify some of the context setting scenarios. Fun note though, Kyle Simpsons at Getify does not like the fat arrow syntax at all. So all that to say, it's a pretty cool syntax. Check it out, but it does require some deeper reading into what's
understanding
happening.
What this is. Just like the first one with the new variable types, kind of requires some understanding of what hoisting is.
Right.
But if you understand those concepts, or you're using JavaScript, writing in ES6 just makes your life a little bit easier.
Right.
So speaking of making our lives a little bit easier, the next thing we want to talk about, number three, is the spread operator. And the spread operator, we were trying to structure this in problem solution and couldn't really come up with, like, a specific problem because it just makes destructuring easier.
Right.
Easier in general. It's really powerful. And the spread operator just looks like a dot, dot, dot. You can use it inside of an array or an object to take all the items within it and be able to interact with them individually.
Yep.
So instead of writing like push and apply when you're using functions, you can just use a spread operator and then apply a function to each of those items, which also makes it easier to transform types. Like if you're using query select or all,
right,
you get a node list, which is fun to work with, but not what you expect, because that's not what you get when you do query selector or any individual selector.
Right.
So you can use this spread operator to sort of break them up and then deal with it individually.
Yeah. So before you used to have it, you have to do some kind of hacky things where you take the, like the dot map method or dot map method from the array prototype.
So you have to transform it into an array and then map.
It was just a little bit wonky.
Yeah.
With the spread operator, you just wrap up that query selector all call within brackets.
And you can also use it as an array literal, which means that if you had a variable that was an array, or if you're using lets, let an array equals, and you have an array of some items. If you want to insert that into another array or use it, you can just use that as one of the arguments in the array. So it just adds those items that you had in the original array to another array, or you can use this with objects. It just really allows you to use the individual items that you're spreading with the spread operator really easily and efficiently.
Boom. So, great.
It's way better in ES6. Solved by ES6. So our next thing is template strings.
Or string interpolation. It's great. And so what it is that in ES6, using the backtick operator, you can now insert variables into your strings. So whereas before you would have to say, you know, quotation mark, string, quotation mark, plus variable, plus string, plus variable.
It's very convoluted syntax.
Got super long, super convoluted, and very messy. Now you have it in one line with this great backtick operator.
And the new lines, is that just like an enter and it takes that new line?
Yeah.
Instead of doing the backslash n?
Yeah, so you can also have multi-line strings as well.
So that's nice if you want to like have output in your CLI that's broken up by lines. Not recommended for DOM usage.
Yes, don't use multi-line strings unless you really have to, because they get kind of wonky.
It's funny because when I first learned about the string templating in ES6, it really reminded me of SAS a lot, because it uses sort of a similar syntax with the string interpolation, like the variable interpolation syntax.
Right. Yeah.
Especially because here it's the dollar sign and then curly brace and your variable name.
Yep.
Whereas in SAS, it's taking Ruby syntax, which I'm sure inspired both of these. It's the hash, so like the pound, and then the same thing, the curly braces and then your variable inside.
Yeah, actually, I think quite a few of the JS templating languages have similar things, but not quite. Like JSX has the dollar sign, curly brace, I think. Handlebars has that too. Mustache might have it.
Yeah, so it basically allows you a template with vanilla JavaScript.
Yeah.
Which is so nice, because you don't have to include your own iteration of whatever templating engine you need to include.
No,
they're all pretty similar.
So it's great, and templating is great.
Solved by ES6.
Great.
and it makes sense, because within one single entity, so that's really nice. Like my last project, I put ES6 into the project just for the string templating.
I would do the same thing.
And then I refactored all the other stuff that we kind of talked about because it was nicer.
Once you get used to using ES6 syntax, it is so hard to write normal JavaScript.
Well, this is normal JavaScript.
I mean, you're right. It's so hard to write ES5 syntax.
Yeah, but luckily you have a transpiler on your side.
Unless you're running Node. And then you don't.
You don't.
Sometimes you do.
You can transpile nodes.
You can, but there's like some other stuff around.
You have to have like the correct version.
So you can actually use Babel on Node as well to transpile ES6 syntax down to ES5 Babel or Node. And actually, the newest version of Node does support a lot of the ES6 stuff. However, the app I'm working on is on the old version of Node.
Well, most people's system Node is still 0.12, 0.12, and the latest version is like 5.4.
5.5, I think, now.
Yeah, but so version 5, if you're using Node Version Manager, NVM, it's fine because you can just quickly update your Node version and then use it and use ES6, but it's not likely that your entire team will be on it.
Right.
So.
And then it gets trippy if people don't know ES6 syntax and like, why is this thing broken? We definitely had that.
Yeah, and then it breaks the whole app when you try to run it if you don't realize that you're not in the correct version of Node. So just watch out for that,
I guess.
Okay, number 5. This is the last solved by ES6 little tidbit. And this is ES6 modules.
Yeah, so prior in JavaScript, you used to have these two syntaxes called CommonJS and AMD for modules and module loading. But they were both kind of hacks around the language. They aren't actually a standard per se. And now with ES6, you have this great standard where everyone uses the same syntax to do modules.
So instead of needing to have some kind of plugin or bundler, like require Webpack, Browserify, there's all these things that do this for you, you can have a common syntax, a common language from which to speak for all of your apps in vanilla JavaScript.
Fair note, though, that because ES6 is not fully supported amongst all different browsers, and I don't think any of them support modules right now, you do still have to use Webpack or Browserify to load the modules into one file. But
that is a part of your pre-build step.
Yes.
Especially if you're using the transpiler, which you have to use.
Yep.
And then you have it all packaged up and ready to go.
We actually had a show on Webpack and Browserify.
Episode number two.
Yep. Yeah, so go check that out for our deep dive into Webpack and Browserify.
Yeah, we go into the modules. We talk about AMD. We talk about CommonJS. We talk about how to use them. It's a great show.
Good times. Good times.
Good times with JavaScript modules. Becoming increasingly popular as JavaScript web apps and larger JavaScript applications and even websites grow.
Yeah. The one really cool thing about ES6 modules that CommonJS and AMD don't have is this thing called tree shaking. And it's when the ES6 moduler goes through all the modules and sees what's actually being used and what's not, and then just discards what's not being used.
Which seems like a linting task. Like, that's what linters sort of do to make sure you're using a function within your application.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But sometimes you miss something, or, for example, you're importing a library, like, let's say, jQuery, although maybe you don't need jQuery. But supposing jQuery was an ES6 module.
Or, like, utilities. Or, right?
Some big utility library that somebody else wrote, and you just want one function. With ES6, you just say, import that one function. And the ES6 tree shaking bundling shenanigans will say, all right, I see you want this file, but you only need this one function. So in your bundle, I'll only include this one function.
Well, let's talk about the syntax really quick, because I think we missed that.
Oh, yeah.
So when you use modules in ES6, you can export your whole file, or you can export, that's if you do export default in the file name, like you could do const function name, then have all of your functions inside of that and properties and variables, et cetera.
Yep.
Or you can use the curly brace syntax to export individual files if you don't have that default keyword.
Yep.
To import them.
Or you can do both, too.
Yeah.
In the same file.
So you have options here when you're importing files between each other. Modules themselves like just allow you to create very small reusable chunks of code.
Yep.
Which allows for really clean architecture.
Which is really nice.
And important.
And very important. And will save your life a year later.
Yeah. So you have some options here, some variety that definitely are inspired by these various bundler systems.
Right.
But now they are in ES6.
Yeah, one fun fact about the tree shaking part is that it's only available in a very few set of module loaders. Webpack 2.0, which is in beta right now, supports it, as well as this thing called system.js. So only those two have ES6 import bundle tree shaking thing.
Which is really cool. I've never heard of tree shaking before.
But yeah, super cool. And that's our five quick hits about ES6.
Yeah, so quickly just to go over those five little solved by ES6 fun snippets. The first is the new variable types, so let and const. Then we have arrow functions, aka the fat arrow. Then number three is the spread operator, super, super useful as we talked about. Number four is template strings, also just as useful, I would say.
Not more so, but it's great. I love template strings.
And then the last one is the ES6 modules. So that's just a quick overview of things you can do with the current state of JavaScript.
Yeah, and there's so much more in ES6. We'll add a link to the Babel Docs, which has a great rundown of the various ES6 features.
Yeah, the Babel Docs in that are pretty great.
And, yeah.
Thanks for listening this week. See you next time.